This is Audible.
Bantam Audio Publishing presents a Turner Bantam Audio production of Ishmael by Daniel Quinn, winner of the Turner Tomorrow Fellowship. The first time I read the ad, I choked and cursed and spat and threw the paper to the floor. Since even this wasn't enough, I snatched it up, marched into the kitchen, and shoved it into the trash. While I was there, I made myself a little breakfast and gave myself some time to cool down. I ate and thought about something else entirely. That's right. Then I dug the paper out of the trash and turned back to the personal section, just to see if the damn thing was still there. It was. Teacher seeks pupil. Must have an earnest desire to save the world. Apply in person. An earnest desire to save the world. Oh, I like that. An earnest desire to save the world. Yeah, that was splendid. You will doubtless wonder, why is this man so indignant, so bitter? That's a fair question. The answer goes back to a time a couple of decades ago, when I'd had the silly notion that the thing I most needed in the world was a teacher. That's right. I imagined I needed a teacher to show me how one goes about doing something that might be called saving the world. It came about in this way. During the children's revolt of the 60s and 70s, I was just old enough to understand what these kids had in mind, and just young enough to believe that they might actually succeed. It's true. Every morning when I opened my eyes, I expected to see that the new era had begun, that the sky was a brighter blue and the grass a brighter green. I expected to hear laughter in the air and to see people dancing in the streets. Not just kids. Everyone. Then one day, when I was in my mid-teens, I woke up and saw that the revolt had dwindled away into a fashion statement. I was disillusioned and bewildered, and in my innocence, I thought there must be someone out there who could set me straight, a teacher, so I looked for one. Silly as it sounds now, that's what I did. I looked until I wised up and stopped making a fool of myself. And now, years after I'd given up the search, here was some charlatan advertising in the paper for the very same young dreamer I'd been 15 years ago. I know this doesn't really explain my outrage. Let it go. I was being irrational. It happens. It's allowed. I had to go, of course. Had to satisfy myself that it was just another scam. 30 seconds would do it. A single look. 10 words out of his mouth. Then I would go home and forget about it. When I got there, I was surprised to find it was a very ordinary sort of office building. I'd expected something a little more atmospheric. Brownstone with paneled walls, high ceilings, and shuttered windows, perhaps. I was looking for room 105, and I found it in the back, where a window would overlook the alley. The door was uninformative. I pushed it open and stepped into a large, empty room. That was my first impression, emptiness. The second was olfactory. The place reeked of the circus. No, not the circus, the menagerie. Unmistakable, but not unpleasant. I looked around. Against the wall at the left stood a small bookcase containing 30 or 40 volumes, mainly on history, prehistory, and anthropology. A lone, overstuffed chair stood in the middle, facing the wall at the right. There was something odd about the room, but it took me another look round to figure out what it was. In the wall opposite the door stood two tall windows admitting a feeble light from the alley. The wall to the left was blank. The wall to the right was pierced by a large plate glass window, but this was plainly not a window to the outside world, for it admitted no light at all. It was a window into an adjacent room. Because it was backed by darkness, the glass in this window was black, opaque, reflective. I made no attempt to see beyond it. As I approached, I was the spectacle under observation. On arrival, I continued to gaze into my own eyes for a moment, then rolled the focus forward beyond the glass, and found myself looking into another pair of eyes. I fell back, startled. And then, recognizing what I'd seen, I fell back again, now a little frightened. The creature on the other side of the glass was a full-grown gorilla. Full-grown says nothing, of course. He was terrifyingly enormous. A boulder, a sarsen of Stonehenge. His sheer mass was alarming in itself, even though he wasn't using it in any menacing way. On the contrary, he was half sitting, half reclining, most placidly nibbling delicately on a slender branch he carried in his left hand like a wand. I didn't know what to say. You can judge my confusion by this fact, that it seemed to me I should speak, excuse myself, explain my presence, justify my intrusion, beg the creature's pardon. I felt it was an affront to gaze into his eyes, but I was paralyzed, helpless. I could look at nothing else in the world but his face, more hideous than any other in the animal kingdom because of its similarity to our own, yet in its way more noble than any Greek ideal of perfection. As my fear began to ebb, I said to myself that there was nothing to keep me there, that I should go home. But I didn't like to leave without accomplishing anything at all. I looked around thinking I'd leave a note if I could find something to write on, but there was nothing. Nevertheless, this search brought to my attention something I'd overlooked in the room that lay beyond the glass. It was a sign or poster hanging on the wall behind the gorilla. It read, "With man gone, will there be hope for gorilla?" This text stopped me. Words are my profession. I seized these and demanded that they explain themselves, that they cease to be ambiguous. Did they imply that hope for gorillas lay in the extinction of mankind, or in mankind's survival? With man gone, will there be hope for gorilla? It was, of course, a con, meant to be inexplicable. It disgusted me, because the magnificent creature beyond the glass was evidently there just to serve as a sort of illustration.